say the winds have now changed and appear to be carrying the radiation back toward the Soviet Union.
Brain Damage is in the air every Saturday night, beginning at 10.
Möchten Sie etwas zu trinken haben?
And whether you believe it or not, it's affecting you already. Brain Damage, USD's free-form radio talk show. So tune in and call up every Saturday night. Again, that's coming up in just a bit here on Long Island's first station of the 90s. A new exhibition, Black Printmakers and the WPA, has opened at the museums at Stony Brook. 50 prints created under the aegis of the Works Progress Administration during the Great Depression illustrate the works of talented African-American artists who, for the first time, were able to enter the mainstream of American art. The exhibition may be seen through December 31st in the Art Museum. For further information, call the museums at Stony Brook at 751-0066. At 751-0066. This is WUSB, Stony Brook.
Stardate November 17th. We on the Earth's surface see the stars as tiny pinpoints of light. Starlight may travel for years at the fastest speed in the universe, 186,000 miles per second, before encountering our small planet. Then, in the last few hundred miles before it reaches us, light encounters an obstacle, the atmosphere surrounding planet Earth. Starlight travels in a nearly perfect vacuum for most of its journey through space. When it reaches Earth, the atmosphere lets the light pass through, but not without a cost. As the light crosses the boundary between outer space and the atmosphere, the light is bent slightly or refracted. If you've ever placed a spoon in a glass of water, you've made the acquaintance of refraction. Water's even denser than air, and light rays bouncing off the spoon create an optical illusion. At the boundary between the air and the water in your glass, the light's refracted, and the spoon appears broken in two. The same thing happens in the sky, especially for objects seen close to the horizon, since we have to look at them through a greater quantity of air. A star very near the horizon appears about half a degree higher in the sky than it really is. The same effect holds true for the sun, so that whenever you see the sun on the horizon, at sunset or sunrise, it's really just below it. This is Stardate, our writer and our producer, Deborah Bird. For a copy of Stardate magazine, send your name and address and a dollar to the University of Texas McDonald Observatory, Austin, Texas, zip code 78712. And please let us know the name of the radio station where you listen to Stardate. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
what great music that was. I want you rocking back inside my heart. From Julie Cruz. Her album, Floating Into the Night, contains a lot of music. Shows up on the TV show Twin Peaks, which is on right now, but nobody's watching it because they're all listening to WUSB in Stony Brook, brain damage. Yeah, and I saw Julie Cruz this week. I saw her in the city. Now, at performing, not walking down the street. I saw her inside an auditorium kind of place, and she puts on quite a show. Quite a show indeed, and if anyone gets the opportunity to see her, well, you know, I recommend it, that kind of thing. Jim, are you there? Jim?
Yeah.
There you are. What are you doing?
I'm eating a sandwich.
You're not supposed to eat in there, Jim.
Pardon?
You know what somebody did? Somebody took all the tape machines and put them into super slow mode. I was queuing up a tape before, and it took me about a half hour to do it because the tape was going so slow, and I couldn't figure out what was wrong. Somebody meticulously set all of the tape recorders to the slowest possible speed. Now, who do you think would do something like that, Jim?
Well, not me.
Uh-huh. Now, you were on right before me, and you do have a history of trying to make things difficult for me.
I do?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Uh-huh. Like eating on the air when you're not supposed to?
Well, I'm not supposed to eat now?
No, you're not. Not on the air. Not on the radio. It's against federal law.
It is?
It certainly is. You're in a lot of trouble now because...
Really?
We have 250,000 listeners, and they're all going to report you for...
To whom?
What? Sorry?
To whom are they going to report me?
Whoever they wish. I don't know.
What's the relevant agency?
I'm sure we'll have many, many suggestions tonight. Cover all bases.
This is good.
Well, what are you eating, anyway?
A turkey sandwich.
Why is a fan on? Listen to this. Listen to this noise. That's the noise of a fan.
That's one of your biggest fans, Eric.
Jim left. Why'd you leave the fan on in here, Jim?
I didn't leave it on. You just didn't turn it off when you turned the mic on.
Yeah, I'm turning it off now.
Okay. This is good.
Why, is it hot in here again or something?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, they never get it right, do they? Well, exciting week, wasn't it, Jim?
Yes.
Really exciting week. What happened in your life? I saw Julie Cruz. That's about it for me.
Well, I think that's nice. I think she's a great artist, and it's a great number that you played, great cut that you played before, to open the show.
Yeah. I'm going to play one more, too, before
really
I take calls later on.
I mean, not only is she a great singer, but does some interesting stuff with the instruments on the song.
And she's a great singer.
And she is a great singer, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. She didn't write those songs. David Lynch wrote the words, and what's his name? Angelo. What's his name again? I keep forgetting his name. Angelo Badalamenti wrote all the music.
Ah.
Yeah, he's really good. Really good.
He is. Whoops. 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 Yes, it's time once again for the whoops hour. No. Sorry.
Oh, boy.
Just adjusting my chair.
The amateur hour is more like it.
Yeah, I'll say.
Jim, you were complaining before. Why were you complaining?
Well, I was complaining because I don't like the way you come walking in and you expect...
Oh.
Me to end my show on time.
No.
And I've had enough...
Not that. You don't talk about that. No, I mean, what were you complaining about before that I said, Jim, maybe you should stay around and we'll talk about that on the radio show?
Well, I was commenting on the proposed changes.
Start date November 17th.
Sorry. Joel, out.
Everybody wants to get on the act. Cha-cha-cha-cha.
For years.
Yep.
Okay, sorry about that.
No, it's quite all right.
It won't happen again.
It's quite all right.
All right.
As a matter of fact, in a way, it's kind of appropriate that this seems to be creeping in here because I think the way things are going with mass transit these days, we may have to consider celestial travel as an alternative to getting to and from places.
Well, that's a real smooth transition you just did there, but it does bring up an interesting point as far as mass transit. What is going on with mass transit? Why am I suddenly hearing all these cuts in service and things like that, you know? And it's going to affect a lot of people here at Stony Brook, let me tell you.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. What with the LIR proposing a number of service changes for the
service
most part.
Eliminations.
Reductions or eliminations, yes, including the closing overnight, that is between 1:30 a.m. and 4:30 a.m. of the Flatbush Avenue Terminal and Pennsylvania Station, I guess
closing
at least of the LIRR portion of Pennsylvania Station. And that's a rather staggering thought, I feel. The people that have to make those cuts, the way I look at it, I'm not ready to point the finger of blame specifically at any one individual. What it comes down to, according
to the... I'll take care of that, Jim.
Okay. According to the information I've been reading, is that because of a downturn in the local economy, regional economy, because of a falling off of ridership, a resultant falling off of ridership on the LIRR, and also because of... general reduction
because,
in available funds.
What their logic was amazing. Only 500 people used the service between 1:30 and 4:30 out of Penn Station. And, you know, those 500 people, what are they going to do? You know, they're going to have to get in somehow and get out somehow. So
right.
They're either going to have to drive their own cars or get the people that they work for to drive them in somehow. That's 500 additional cars on
That's
the road.
Right.
And a lot more than that because... Supposing all the people that go into the city, they're not sure, you know, if they're going to get out by midnight sometimes.
That's
sometimes
right.
They have to stay later.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's the slightest chance that there's not going to be a train, you're going to drive in, of course. So
of course.
It could be many, many more cars on the road as a result
Absolutely.
Of this. Plus the people that don't have cars, what are they going to do? You know, they're really messed up as far as all this goes.
Absolutely.
It's, it's in consideration on their part, I think, for these people that really probably need the service more than anybody else.
Yeah, I would say so. And what I would also say is that the people, from my standpoint, the people running the railroad, I'm not even prepared to specifically blame the people running the railroad or even the state, the overall state of New York, which runs the MTA, which runs the Long Island Railroad. And, of course, by the way, the New York City Transit Authority, which, by the way, although it doesn't seem as definite as the LIRR, they are also... talking about the idea of stopping a bus and subway service between 1 a.m. and 5 a.m.
That's crazy.
Although I don't think it's going to get to that in the case of that.
Well,
I didn't get the feeling that they really intend to, but they were saying that it's one possibility, but one that they did not want to do and that they probably would look to raise fares instead. Not that that's such a great thing.
Uh-huh.
Or try some other cost-cutting means. What I was going to say was that ultimately I think that with these things happening... I think that there has to be on the federal level, and I'm not saying the federal government has to solve all the monetary or other problems that localities or states or regions have, but I think in this particular instance, at the federal level, there has to be a nonpartisan look at the vital importance of preserving mass transit, mass transportation, countrywide, and
well, the country is in a lot of trouble because it's literally falling apart. Major organizations are going out of business. There's strikes. I mean, I just remembered that the Greyhound workers are still on
That's
strike.
Right.
You know, they went to support the Daily News people yesterday. They're still on strike. We haven't heard anything about them. Lots of people losing their jobs, being laid off, and companies going out of business, prices going up out of the sky. And here we are, wandering around the globe, saying, "Oh, we're going to, you know, knock this dictator out of power," and just having a lot of fun over there. It seems like we've got our priorities kind of messed up, to say the least, and some reshuffling has got to be done. You know, if we could take even a tenth of the money that's been spent on this fiasco in Iraq or Saudi Arabia, I don't think we'd have any of these problems, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, if it were possible to take money that's being spent from, let's say, in that area, or certainly other areas that could be looked at and rethink priorities, I think that we wouldn't be at a point where something as vital as transportation for people, for the most part, what I'm looking at is transportation for people who, as you said, have to go to work. I mean... there's going to be, if let's say there's no 24-hour LIRR service, there's going to be a lot of people, I think, on the weekends who normally would stay late in the city and for recreation and then go back on one of the overnight trains, and they won't be able to do that. And that'll be more cars in the city, and that will also mean some people that might have a little, let's say a little alcohol in celebration.
Right.
And
a lot more drunk drivers on the road.
Might be more drunk drivers. That's just one way of looking at it. But even more so, as you mentioned, during the week in particular, or whatever day, there are night workers that depend upon the railroad. I'm sure they're... I used to depend upon some of those trains. I don't at the moment. but I'm sure there still are people that do. And
well, I'd say I took the 140 out of Penn Station mm-hmm. only a couple of weeks
uh-huh.
ago.
Well, there it is.
It was packed. It had a lot of people.
I'm sure that it was, and I think that this is something to be looked at very closely. And the idea of being at a point where where we have to see the actual closing down of this service altogether, or practical matter, I think for a lot of people, closing it down, is a terrible thing. And I think that, again, it indicates some misplaced priorities. And it may very well be that this was the only thing, I mean, I don't know for sure, but this may very well be the only thing that the railroad could do. But I think that there's more at play here than simply what the Long Island Railroad decides to do, or what even the MTA does, or what even the state of New York does. I think that it's what the federal government does. And again, I'm looking at this not just in terms of the current administration, but as far as a general overall placing of priorities. And I think that if we look at not only the importance of people being able to get to and from work, but the overall question of energy conservation and of infrastructure, roadway infrastructure, not being able to support that much automobiles, and localities not being able to support that many automobiles, all of a sudden clogging an area, a vicinity at once. And let me reemphasize the question of energy conservation, energy efficiency. Mass transportation is the way to go, and it's not only something that should be maintained at its current level. I think that mass transit services should be increased. There was a line in the in one of the releases, news releases, regarding the service changes as far as closing Flatbush Avenue Terminal and Penn Station were concerned. And the line said that this brings into line brings the LIRR into line with the Metro North policy of closing down Grand Central Terminal overnight between 1:30 a.m. and 5:30 a.m. And that may be true, and from that specific definition of running several mass transit services, the MTA, as far as its commuter lines, what I guess they're saying is we're not being inconsistent in shutting down Penn Station and Flatbush Avenue. We already have done it with Grand Central. It may have been the thing that they have to do, or they felt they had to do at the moment. But I don't think, first of all, it should have to come to that. I think that there should be funds available, if necessary, federal funds available from, I guess, let's say the Urban Mass Transit Administration, to keep these facilities open, to keep them at least at their current level. I think it's a shame of having to look at things as, let's say, closing down the terminals, Penn Station, Flatbush Avenue, and saying it's coming into line with closing down Grand Central, because I think Grand Central never should have been closed down to begin with.
Uh-huh. Well, there's a lot less traffic going out of Grand Central.
I think that there is, but I think even that, I think it was a pity to shut that down and lose that overnight service.
It's also a lot easier when you shut down these stations to keep the homeless people out of them, which has been a major thing.
Well, that's also an issue, but actually, if that is one of the considerations, I would say that logically, it doesn't make sense if there is a homeless problem to address it by shutting down mass transportation facilities.
Well,
I think
it
would be better to solve the homeless problem
as
looking at it as a housing problem instead of as a problem
right.
of shutting down a
admit that that's what they're addressing. But I mean, look at what's been going on in the area, especially around Penn Station. They've been they closed off all the 24-hour bank machines because
mm-hmm.
homeless people were living in there, and inconvenienced everybody else in the process. You know, who didn't really have a problem with the
mm-hmm.
homeless people. They needed access to the bank machines. Now they don't have access, and the blame has been cast upon the homeless people. Perhaps the same thing might be said someday of this train schedule that has been closed down because homelessness is too much of a problem. I don't know.
Well, actually, when Grand Central was first closed down, the reason given was that that they didn't use the term homeless, but I think they said that, as it was put, derelicts were there. And that was used as the reason to shut it down. Now, they're not saying that officially now in terms of closing down Penn Station. I don't know I haven't looked at their books, obviously, but I mean, I'm willing to accept that they're telling the truth, that it's going to save them money. But what I'm saying is it's a shame that it comes to the point where the LIRR feels it has to save money by eliminating this service altogether.
Yeah, their main purpose for existence is providing service, and if they shut down that service, they stop providing it, and I think that's something that we should all take a good look at, because, you know, if they don't use the trains that they're supposed to be using, what are they there for, you know?
Well, that's right. And as a matter of fact, another reason given for shutting it down was that it was going to make it more efficient, and I don't doubt this, to proceed with the modernization of the Long Island Railroad level of Penn Station. But the irony there is that all this money, there's a tremendous amount of money that's going to be spent on this, and this is a very worthwhile project per se, but if one has to shut down overnight service in order to accomplish the modernization, it seems a bit paradoxical to me. Plus, another reason given was that, or statement made in regards to the shutting down of Flatbush Terminal and Penn Station, was that the Long Island Railroad is the only commuter line in the country offering 24-hour service. Now, I understand the implications of that statement. I understand that what the railroad is saying is that it's not as if they are, in shutting down the 24-hour operation out of Penn and Flatbush, that they are falling short of the rest of the country. What they're saying is that the rest of the country doesn't offer it.
Wait, doesn't Metro North offer it?
No, because Grand Central is shut down between 1:30 a.m. and 5:30 a.m. It continues to be shut down.
Oh, really?
Yes. I understand what they're saying. I certainly am willing to acknowledge that, yes, if they're the only railroad in the country doing this, and they feel that they're so squeezed that they can't do it anymore, that if they do it, they shut down Penn and Flatbush, it's not as if they're giving less than what other railroads give. But what I am suggesting is that a more, rather than just looking at individual stopgap solutions, I think a more comprehensive solution, and I understand that that has to involve, I feel, has to involve the federal government as well as the state government and state agencies, a more comprehensive solution has to be looked at. I would say, rather than bringing the LIRR into line with other commuter lines that don't have 24-hour service, I'd say maintain the 24-hour service on the LIRR and let people who are involved in long-range planning in the federal government look at the feasibility and work with the localities in providing more service, perhaps other commuter rail lines with 24-hour service. I would think the trend should go in the other direction. And so I'm concerned about the fact of this happening. I'm concerned about the inconvenience. I mean, I'm a Long Island Railroad commuter, yes, and I have a personal interest in it. There could be potential inconvenience for me. But I'm also looking at it from the standpoint of the inconvenience in general to not just commuters, but to people who are willing to use mass transit for one-shot trips back and forth into the city or within Long Island, and either have no other way of doing it other than train, or who have a car but are willing to forego using the car to do it. And I'm concerned about the overall implications of this as far as a long-range trend. Does this mean that it will become more accepted for continued fall-off of mass transit facilities, which, apart from the specific problem or the need for more and better mass transit, it leads to the implication of going in the opposite direction of solutions to problems that we have that go beyond just the idea of getting from one place to another. It gets back to this energy question. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of consciousness that has been developed over the years, certainly more so than there used to be, about the need for energy conservation in many different forms. And I think it's great. I think it's wonderful. And I think it should be continued. But if we start to see a situation where there's cutbacks in the most busy commuter rail line in the country, the LIRR.
Which is why they're 24 hours, because it's the busiest.
Exactly. If we see that, and if we see, even though it's not as sure a thing, but, you know, just even talk about shutting down buses and subways overnight in New York City, if we just see this kind of thing, To me, it's a disturbing thought, because it means that there's the possibility of there being a general acceptance of losing existing potential solutions to very big problems that are confronting the country. And
making everything a whole lot worse.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Then we've got to move on to Germany.
Okie doke, very yeah. good. Thank but you for
thanks for
discussing
for stopping by and, sure. and talking about this. And we'll probably come back to this later on during the call-in segment. And I'm sure you can listen to that. Are you taking the train tonight, or are you taking your car?
Actually, no. As a matter of fact, I'm not taking the train. I'm taking my car, but I couldn't use the train to where I'm traveling anyway. But wherever I can,
Jim's
I always use the train.
Jim's protest has begun already. He is boycotting the train.
No, that's not true.
What he's trying to do here is get as many people as possible to boycott the trains with him.
Oh, no, certainly not. Certainly
Jim,
not.
Jim, you've had a history of causing problems.
No, certainly not.
I saw it at that Daily News riot last night.
No.
No?
No.
I was looking for you.
Certainly not.
Well, okay, thanks again for stopping
Thank
by,
you.
And we'll see you, what, in 3 weeks?
Yes.
Okay, good. Okay, good. Well, have a pleasant drive
thanks.
Then.
You too.
And there's Jim Wiener fading away as we resume the program called Brain Damage. 29 minutes after 10 o'clock. And Germany's about to have elections and unite and riots and all that kind of fun thing. So let's find out what the Soviets have to say about that. Then we'll hear from the Germans. And then we got some surprises for you. Exciting things ahead on Brain Damage here on WUSB Stony Brook.
Radio Moscow presents Soviet Viewpoint. Paris will be the venue of a 35-nation conference on European security and cooperation due to open on November the 19th. Here's a commentary by Vladislav Kozyakov. Experts say not a single generation in Europe has had the chance of living without one kind of war or another during the past 1,000 years. A Swiss historian, Jean-Jacques Bebel, puts Europe's toll of life starting from the 17th century at more than 68 million people. But if all goes well, there'll be no place for such gloomy statistics in the future. This belief is strengthened by the end of the Cold War and the forthcoming summit conference in Paris by European countries, the United States, as well as Canada. The conference is expected to produce an unprecedented agreement on reducing conventional weapons in Europe. As one example, the Warsaw Pact is to scrap 19,000 tanks to 4,000 by NATO. The odds, heavily against the Warsaw Pact, will certainly raise some eyebrows, both in the Soviet Union and elsewhere, but not as much as they did when the Soviet Union had agreed to scrap more than twice as many of its missiles under the Superpower Intermediate Nuclear Forces Agreement. However, everyone realizes that it was the start of nuclear disarmament, the numbers involved, which mattered most in bringing greater international security. A similar effect can also be expected this time. Moreover, there'll be a follow-up to the agreement, with more cuts to be made into other types of weapons, troop numbers, and short-range missiles. It's hoped that the Navy's issue will come on the agenda as well. The conference will also tackle other, no less important questions. Agreements on German unity and confidence-building measures in the military area, the establishment of a center for preventing and settling conflicts, and a declaration of new relations between the two military alliances. It will also consider preparations for a next Helsinki 2 summit in 1992. In short, the conference is out to set up new security structures stretching from the Atlantic down to the Urals and covering North America, as well as to assert the fundamentals of a new international order built on confidence, cooperation, respect for human rights, and democracy. None of the countries would feel being threatened or looked upon as an enemy or be armed beyond its defense needs. All of this instills the hope that there will be a dramatic reversal in Europe's long history, heralding the onset of peace and neighborly relations once and for all. And that commentary was by Vladislav Kozyakov. And this was prepared in the studios of Radio Moscow.
Germany Today. People, places, and politics. the arts, too. From Bonn, Berlin, and New York, timely coverage of the events and issues inside Germany that are important to America.
This is Germany Today. I'm Lee Murphy in New York with Joseph Fleming and Alfred Schroeder in Bonn, Melanie Brubaker in Berlin, Mike Shea in Munich, and Lynn Terry reporting from Paris. Kohl and Gorbachev confirm peace for the long-term friendship treaty. As the all-Germany elections loom, so does scandal involving the replacement of former East Germany's Communist Party. Most observers say unified Germany is the economic friend, not foe, of just about everyone else in the Western world. Bringing democracy to what used to be East Germany needs more than praise. It requires perseverance. Were American-run Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty too successful in their efforts to sell political reform across the East? And what happens now? Back to Berlin, as the second year AW, After the Wall, begins. We'll have a special section on that. Details in a moment on Germany Today. There was plenty of GPC. That's the diplomatic version of TLC to go around as Mikhail Gorbachev and Helmut Kohl sat down in Bonn to sign a treaty of good neighborliness, partnership, and cooperation. The ceremony, occurring less than 1 month before the unified Germany's national elections, brought the popular Soviet leader together with the chancellor bidding to become his nation's first all-Germany leader in more than two generations. Kohl is widely expected to be the victor in the December 2nd balloting, but like politics just about everywhere else, there are scandals in what used to be East Germany. But unlike politics American style, the recent German version involves the very bottom line change in ideology, from communism to democracy. The Communist Party in East Germany may be gone, but its heir, the Small Party for Democratic Socialism, is alive and wealthy. And all its gold does not make for a glittering story.
The tiny PDS, which is predicted to bag a mere 2% in the December federal elections, is Europe's, if not the world's, richest party. It has enormous real estate properties and money in the bank estimated at around 8 billion marks, some $5.3 billion, a fortune which is growing rapidly as real estate prices in former East Germany are skyrocketing. The PDS is under heavy fire from its political opponents and the population, which charges that its communist inherited possessions were illegal, and it is rocked by never-ending revelations about attempts to launder illegal millions. A close observer of the scene, radio correspondent Peter Stützle.
The PDS has lost its credibility. I am certain that we face more and most likely more serious revelations of financial manipulations than we have already.
One of the scandals involved the clandestine transfer of 107 million marks to a bank in Norway. A former communist functionary, now regional chairman of the PDS, Karl-Heinz Kaufmann, was arrested in Oslo when he tried to withdraw 70 million marks in cash. Party chairman Gregor Gysi refused to resign after the scandal was uncovered and conceded he couldn't even rule out that additional illegal money deals would be uncovered. Observers agree that the Germans will have to live for a long time with ever new revelations. Alfred Schroeder reporting from Bonn.
There's German unification now and the beginning of European unity in 1992. Americans are either upbeat about that turn of events, seeing the new Europe as a profitable target for U.S. exports, or downbeat, seeing it as a turbocharged economic engine that might outrun America's economy. And what are the opinions closer to German soil? Just about the same.
French executives have long admired Germany, but in the future their admiration could turn to envy or resentment. Germany now has a population of nearly 80 million people, about 1.5 times that of France, and its economy is far stronger. For the moment, many French industries are protected. But come January 1, 1993, when trade barriers are lifted within the European community, France will face stiff competition from its neighbor. That worries some French executives, who fear that after 1993 they'll be pushed into an economic backwater on their home turf. But German industrialists have another point of view. Lothar Späth, prime minister of a German state bordering France, says no one country could ever monopolize Europe, which is made up of interdependent economies.
Think to the international globalization and interdependence of all nations and all economic areas. Everybody who knows worldwide the process of globalization and interlocking economic systems knows that Germany is nothing without export. So Germany is nothing without Europe.
And the new Europe, now that Germany is united, is even larger than before. France's Minister of European Affairs, Elisabeth Guigou, says that should reassure French industrialists.
Germany is already a superpower. And it has been so for years now. And so we are used to live with it. Of course, unification will produce, after a while, after a few years, more economic power. But meanwhile, there will be more possibilities for other countries in Europe as well.
France is well placed to take advantage of the new German market. Already, the French sell more than one half of their exports to their neighbor. But when the standard of living rises in the East, those sales are expected to increase. For Germany Today, this is Lynn Terry in Paris.
Sure, American investigators and judges have the savings and loan mess to clear up. But in the land Erich Honecker once ruled with an iron fist, investigators and judges were often the cause, not the cure, of criminality designed to crush dissent and opposition. Joseph Fleming takes a closer look at the chilling story of the former East Germany's two key weapons against democracy.
One was the Stasi, the powerful secret police. The other was the justice apparatus. In the last 10 years of the existence of the German Democratic Republic, 22,000 people were jailed for trying to flee to the West, and an estimated 70,000 for political offenses. The secret police, of course, now has been disbanded. But the great problem is dealing with the judges and prosecutors who sent East Germans to prison for telling jokes about the communist regime, for demanding free elections, or plotting to escape over the wall. German Justice Minister Hanse Engelhardt has said that bringing democratic constitutional rule to the eastern part of the unified country depends on getting rid of the fanatical communist judges. The Justice Ministry spokesman, Hans-Jürgen Schmidt, says those judges who have bad records are going to be removed.
They have to be examined by special committees, examination committees, who find out whether the judge has done something against human rights. If he has been too harsh in this field, of course, they kick him out. That's it.
It is estimated that between 90 and 95% of the judges were members of Honecker's Communist Party. Schmidt believes at least 30% of the judges will be considered unsuitable for retention. He says Germany will not again keep judges who are tainted politically.
The thing is that we don't want to make the same mistake. We made it after the Second World War. We had a lot of judges who had been under the Nazi regime. And it depends on what you have done as a judge. If you have been dealing with only civil cases, for example, divorce or something like that, it's not so difficult. But if there is a judge, or has been a judge, been responsible for criminal law, it might be different.
The judges who are retained will hold their jobs for a 5-year trial period, and they will get crash courses in Western democratic law. Joseph Fleming in Bonn.
Munich is more than beer halls in the nearby Alps. It's also the 40-year home of the American-run Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty, each of which deserves to be honored for its part in telling the story of Western democracy to those across Eastern Europe who once could only listen long distance or dream about freedom, freedom the way we understand and enjoy it. How are the stations doing today?
They still broadcast the news every day in 23 languages. But now that the Cold War is over, many people question why America is spending $200 million a year to keep the stations on the air. Radio Free Europe President Gene Pell.
We were in Budapest 3 weeks ago for a very long meeting with Prime Minister in Hungary, Mr. Antal, who made a very impassioned plea during the course of a half hour that these broadcasts continue. Mr. Havel in Czechoslovakia has done the same thing.
Pell says his stations have never been more popular, that they've reacted to the new political openness by changing their programming.
We're concentrating more on how-to broadcasting, everything from how to hold an election to how to pick a jury to how to develop a small business to how to enact and enforce local zoning laws.
Pell says when the U.S. government feels democratic institutions have become firmly rooted in the East, he'll turn off the transmitters. That time isn't here yet, but he sees it coming, and he's happy about that. He says it's what Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty have worked for 40 years. In Munich, I'm Mike Shea.
In fact, there's so much history that's been written in the past year alone. We get the special section report from Melanie Brubaker from the eastern side of the Brandenburg Gate. What would still be the other side if the Berlin Wall had not collapsed, along with the hardline communist government that built it?
Although only 12 months have passed, the changes have been dramatic. These are the sounds of people chipping away pieces of the wall. In the area surrounding the wall near Brandenburg Gate, guard posts and barbed wire have been replaced by a free market economy. Tourists can buy a large piece of the wall for 1 German mark, or approximately 75 cents. Visitors who want to chip off their own piece, however, can rent a hammer and chisel for about $2 for 20 minutes. Frank and Jeanette Katina, visiting Berlin from New Jersey, are doing just that.
It was fun. It was historic. It's a piece of history.
Was it difficult to chip a piece out?
Small pieces, no. Big pieces, yes. They built the wall quite well. It is. It's very well built.
Like many visitors, the Katinas also bought pieces of the wall and other East German goods, items that won't be around much longer.
We bought all kinds of souvenirs and some Russian and East German uniform medals and military medals and pieces of the rock made into sculptures from an artist. And is like bringing home a piece of history.
Indeed, there are numerous pieces of history for sale near the wall in a veritable international bazaar. Near the gate, visitors mill around, eating bratwurst and drinking mulled. Germany's growing unemployment rate. Gabi Vilcek is a member of New Forum, the group that led last year's uprising.
I think we have got many things for what we went on the demonstration in last year, but we had not got so much democracy as we wanted.
But the overall mood of the demonstration was upbeat, said Karin.
It's a very important demonstration for us, for democracy.
What?
Why? Because here are the people.
Now the people must decide what their future will bring. In Berlin, I'm Melanie Brubaker.
In New York, I'm Lee Murphy. Thanks for listening.
Boy, that sounds like garbage, doesn't it?
No, it sounds like a tape is wobbling.
Well, why is the tape wobbling? What's wrong with this place?
I set the everything at slow motion.
Well, everything was in slow motion before, and now it's the tape's warbling. And
yeah, right. It's all my fault.
Yeah, they're cutting trains, and Germany's all reunited. I can't keep up with things these days. But one thing that I'm ahead of everybody else. I just wanted to go on record tonight as saying I was the first, okay? I was the first one. I beat everybody else this year. So just think about that, okay? I'm the first one to play this. I'm the first one to play this week. You're going to hear it a lot, but I played it before anyone else did, so there.
It's called Alice's Restaurant. It's about Alice and the restaurant. But Alice's Restaurant is not the name of the restaurant. That's just the name of the song. And that's why I call the song Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Now it all started two Thanksgivings ago. It was on 2 years ago on Thanksgiving when my friend and I went up to visit Alice at the restaurant. But Alice doesn't live in the restaurant. She lives in the church nearby the restaurant in the bell tower with her husband Ray and Fasha's a dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they got a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. And having all that room, seeing as how they took out all the pews, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, we found all the garbage in there, and we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the city dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, and headed on toward the city dump. Well, we got there, and there's a big sign and a chain across the dump saying closed on Thanksgiving. And we had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before. And with tears in our eyes, we drove off into the sunset looking for another place to put the garbage. We didn't find one till we came to a side road. And off the side of the side road was another 15-foot cliff. And at the bottom of the cliff was another pile of garbage. And we decided that one big pile's better than two little piles, and rather than bring that one up, we decided to throw ours down. That's what we did. Drove back to the church, had a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat, went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning when we got a phone call from Officer Obie. Said, "Kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage, and wanted to know if you had any information about it." And I said, "Yes, sir, Officer Obie, cannot tell a lie. I put that envelope under that garbage." After speaking to Obie for about 45 minutes on the telephone, we finally arrived at the truth of the matter and said that we had to go down and pick up the garbage, and also had to go down and speak to him at the police officer station. So we got in the red VW microbus with the shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, headed on toward the police officer station. Now, friends, there was only one or two things that Obie could have done at the police station, and the first was that he could have given us a medal for being so brave and honest on the telephone, which wasn't very likely, and we didn't expect it. Another thing was that he could have bawled us out and told us never to be seen driving garbage around the vicinity again, which is what we expected. But when we got to the police officer station, there was a third possibility that we hadn't even counted upon, and we was both immediately arrested, handcuffed. And I said, "Obie, I don't think I can pick up the garbage with these handcuffs on." He said, "Shut up, kid. Get in the back of the patrol car." And that's what we did. Sat in the back of the patrol car and drove to the, quote, scene of the crime, unquote. I want to tell you about the town of Stockbridge, Massachusetts, where this happened. Here they got three stop signs, two police officers and one police car. But when we got to the scene of the crime, there was five police officers and three police cars, being the biggest crime of the last 50 years, and everybody wanted to get in a newspaper story about it. And they was using up all kinds of cop equipment that they had hanging around the police officer station. They were taking plaster, tire track, footprints, dog smelling prints, and they took 27 8x10 color glossy photographs with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against them. Took pictures of the approach, the getaway, the northwest corner, and southwest corner, and that's not to mention the aerial photography. After the ordeal, we went back to the jail. Obie said he was going to put us in the cell. Said, "Kid, I'm going to put you in the cell. I want your wallet and your belt." And I said, "Obie, I can understand you want my wallet so I don't have any money to spend in the cell, but what do you want my belt for?" And he said, "Kid, we don't want any hanging." Said, "Obie, did you think I was going to hang myself for littering?" Obi said he was making sure, and friends Obi was, because he took out the toilet seat so I couldn't hit myself over the head and drown. And he took out the toilet paper so I couldn't bend the bars, roll the toilet paper out the window, slide down the roll and have an escape. Obi was making sure, and it was about 4 or 5 hours later that Alice, remember Alice? It's a song about Alice. Alice came by with a few nasty words to Obi on the side, bailed us out of jail. We went back to the church, had another Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat, and didn't get up until the next morning when we all had to go to court. We walked in, sat down. Obi came in with a 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back each one. Sat down. Man came in, said, all rise. We all stood up, and Obi stood up with the 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures. And the judge walked in, sat down with the C&I dog, and he sat down. We sat down. Obi looked at the C&I dog. Then the 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, and looked at the C&I dog. And then at the 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, and began to cry, because Obi came to the realization that it was a typical case of American blind justice and there wasn't nothing he could do about it. And the judge wasn't going to look at the 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against them. And we was fined $50 and had to pick up the garbage in the snow, but that's not what I came to tell you about. Came to talk about the draft. Got a building down New York City, it's called Whitehall Street, where you walk in and you get injected, inspected, detected, infected, neglected, and selected. I went down and got my physical examination one day, and I walked in and sat down. Got good and drunk the night before, so I looked and felt my best when I went in that morning. Because I wanted to look like the all-American kid from New York City. Man, I wanted to feel like that. I wanted to be the all-American kid from New York. And I walked in, sat down, I was hung down, brung down, hung up, and all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things. And I walked in, I sat down, they gave me a piece of paper, said, kid, see the psychiatrist, room 604. And I went up there, I said, shrink, I want to kill. And I want to see blood and gore and guts and veins in my teeth. Eat dead, burnt bodies. I mean, kill. And I started jumping up and down, yelling, kill. And it started jumping up and down with me, and we was both jumping up and down, yelling, kill. And the sergeant came over, came to meddle on me, set me down the hall, said, you're our boy. And you feel too good about it. Proceeded on down the hall, getting more injections, inspections, detections, neglections, and all kinds of stuff that they were doing to me at the thing there. And I was there for 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. I was there for a long time, going through all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things, and I was just having a tough time there. And they was inspecting, injecting every single part of me, and they was leaving no part untouched. Proceeded through, and I when finally came to see the very last man, I walked in, sat down after a whole big thing there, and I walked up and said, what do you want? He said, kid, we only got one question. Have you ever been arrested? And I proceeded to tell him the story of Alice's restaurant, Massacre, with full orchestration and five-part harmony and stuff like that, and then all the phenomena stopped it right there. It said, kid, did you ever go to court? I proceeded to tell him the story of the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, and stopped me right there and said, kid, I want you to go over and sit down on that bench that says Group W. Now, kid. And I walked over to the bench there, and there's his group W is where they put you. If you may not be moral enough to join the army after committing your special crime, and here was all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly-looking people on the bench there. Mother rapers. Father stabbers. Father rapers. Father rapers sitting right there on the bench next to me. And one, it was mean and nasty and ugly and horrible and crime-fighting guys are sitting there on the bench. And the meanest, ugliest, nastiest one, the meanest father raper of them all, was coming over to me, and he was mean and ugly and nasty and horrible and all kinds of things. And it sat down next to me and said, "Kid, what'd you get?" I said, "I didn't get nothing. I had to pay $50 and pick up the garbage." He said, "What were you arrested for, kid?" I said, "Littering." And they all moved away from me on the bench there to carry on all kinds of mean, nasty things. Till I said, "And creating a nuisance." And they all came back, shook my hand, and we had a great time on the bench talking about crime, mother stabbing, father raping, all kinds of groovy things that we were talking about on the bench. And everything was fine. We were smoking cigarettes and all kinds of things until the sergeant came over. Had some paper in his hand, held it up, and said, "Kids, this piece of paper's got 47 words, 37 cents, it's 58 words. We want to know details of the crime, time, crime, and else kind of thing. You got a safe time to tell about the crime. I want to know the rest of the officer's name and else kind of thing. You got to say in the talk for 45 minutes, and nobody understood a word that he said. But we had fun filling out the forms and playing with the pencils on the bench there. I filled out the massacre with the four-part harmony and wrote it down there just like it was, and everything was fine, and I put down a pencil, and I turned over the piece of paper, and there on the other side, in the middle of the other side, away from everything else on the other side, in parentheses, capital letters, quotated, read the following words: "Kid, you rehabilitated yourself." I went over to the sergeant and said, "Sergeant, you've got a lot of damn gall to ask me if I've rehabilitated myself. I'm sitting here on the bench. I mean, I'm sitting here on the Group W bench. Because you want to know if I'm moral enough to join the army, burn women, kids, houses, and villages after being a litter bug." He left at me and said, "Kid, you don't like your kind. And we're going to send your fingerprints off to Washington, and friends, somewhere in Washington, enshrined in some little folder, is a study in black and white of my fingerprints. And the only reason I'm singing you the song now is because you may know somebody in a similar situation. Or you may be in a similar situation. And if you're in a situation like that, there's only one thing you can do, is walk into the shrink wherever you are. Just walk in and say, 'Shrink, you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant,' and walk out. You know, if one person, just one person does it, they may think he's really sick and they won't take him. And if two people do it in harmony, they think they're both faggots and it won't take either of them. And if three people do it, can you imagine three people walking in, singing a bar, Alice's restaurant, and walking out? They may think it's an organization. And can you imagine 50 people a day? I said 50 people a day walking in, singing a bar, Alice's restaurant, and walking out. And friends, they may think it's a movement. and that's what it is. The Alice's Restaurant, anti-massacre movement, and all you gotta do to join is to sing it the next time it comes around on the guitar with feeling. So we'll wait till it comes around on the guitar here. Sing it when it does. Here it comes. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in it around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. That's horrible. Want to end war and stuff, you gotta sing loud. You could put a lot. I've been singing the song now for 25 minutes. I could sing it for another 25 minutes. I'm not proud. Or tired. So we'll wait till it comes around again. And this time with four-part harmony in the TLM. We're just waiting for it to come around, is what we're doing. All right now. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Accepting Alice. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. So walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. At Alice's Restaurant.
Very few radio stations do this. Oops. Oh, boy. That's why they don't do it, because sometimes that happens. Yes, the needle fell right across the label there. But I know you heard every last second of applause and every inch of silence that followed the applause until we had that little accident there. Alice's Restaurant by Arlo Guthrie. And I'm surprised how nice this record sounds. We've had it for such a long time. But it still sounds great year after year, and I was the first person to play it this year. And I'm not going to want to hear it again until next year, that's for sure. Arlo Guthrie. And the program is Brain Damage. It's 6 minutes after 11 o'clock. Yeah, we're running late, folks. The Tripods aren't even here yet. They're going to be here in a couple of seconds. We have a couple of celebrity guests in the other room. Guests, are you there? Can you hear us? Speak. They're just sitting there. You must be able to hear me. Hello, hello. Say something. Speak. They are saying something. That's, oh, you know, I'm, okay, I got the wrong thing up here. We're going to start this all over again, pretend it didn't happen. Hello, celebrity guest, say something.
Hello.
Ah, there we go. That's much better.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you fine. Who might we have in the other room there?
This is Andrew Goldberger.
Andrew Goldberger, in the flesh.
Sure. And this is Rick.
Rick.
Sure.
Hi, Rick. Hi, Andrew.
How you doing?
Hi, and if we can, we have a couple of people to say hi to.
Okay, give a shout out to those
Andy.
People. Give
sure.
A shout out to them, and we're going to come back through the tripods and take phone calls later. Go ahead.
Sounds good.
Guff the Man, Andrew, Frankie Fresh, Leon Carlin, all the guys in the Voice in the Hood. The leading ladies in my life, Ravishing Renee, Tantalizing Tara, Luscious Lori, and Cute Karen.
Go, go, go.
Eric Spoto.
Is this another leading lady in your life?
No.
Oh,
several of them, I think, huh?
Eric Spoto, Ed Jamisco, Marinello Paul, Dave Hughes, Dave Mackey, Andrew Zaroff, and we have two special announcements.
Wow, I hope they're listening out there.
Jacob Rubio would like to say, I love you, Nicole. Will you go out with me? And Jim Fleming would like to say, Robin Ginsberg, I love you, but will you go out with me?
Wow. That a dandy.
That seems to be the extent of conversations in
Yes, we have 750 people.
Now, you mentioned it a couple of times before that you've gotten 750 people to listen to this radio show. Now, we already have 250,000 people that listen every week, but how did you get an extra 750 just like that?
We passed out a couple of flyers.
Uh-huh. And word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
You wouldn't have to have any of those flyers, would you?
Yeah, we got a couple.
Oh, I'd like to see just what you said. But that's something we'll talk about later on. The phone number here is 632-6901. I guess if you have 750 people out there that you got... we should have all five lines lit like that. I guess the reason why they're not lit right now is because everyone's calling at once and getting cross circuit. So after they, they mill that out and get their lines untangled, we'll see all five lines light up. 632-6901. We're going to come back to the celebrities in a few minutes. First, a brand new feature of this radio program, an exciting feature. Comes right after a non-exciting feature, which is the news. It's very short, though. Very short news today. Almost no news at all. But then we're going to go into our very exciting feature. And, boy, it's something that we had to battle for here at the radio station. But I think it was worth it. I think it's worth the cost, the expense, the near loss of life. But that's something we'll go into later. Here is the news as it comes off the Associated Press, soon to be the only news service in this country. A human rights group paints a grim picture of life in Kuwait under Iraqi rule. The New York-based Middle East Watch, says Iraqi troops have executed at least 250 people, arbitrarily detained thousands more, and are erasing all vestiges of Kuwaiti culture. President Bush's historic trip to Europe and the Mideast takes him next to Germany, where he'll seek more support against Iraq from Chancellor Helmut Kohl. The first U.S. president to visit Czechoslovakia was greeted today by tens of thousands of cheering people. Margaret Thatcher. Yes. Oh. Margaret Thatcher. Oh, I can't. It just sort of makes me freeze after I say it each time. Margaret Thatcher. You got to get that out of your system. Margaret Thatcher. There, I can do it now. Margaret Thatcher may be down, but she says she's not out. Despite six new polls that boost the man who's trying to unseat the British Prime Minister, Thatcher's quoted in the Sunday Telegraph as saying, she won't quit. I don't know. If I was trying to unseat Margaret Thatcher, I would not want to sit in the seat she's been sitting in for the last however many years. Oh, yes. And finally, Stormy Jones is being remembered as a gallant, courageous teenager who wanted to live a normal life. The 13-year-old was laid to rest today after losing a six-year battle to survive with a new heart and liver. It's 11 minutes after 11 o'clock. We have 4 degrees Celsius. That's 39 on the Fahrenheit scale. Hey, look at that. The phones are starting to light up, but we still got a few more lines there, folks. 632-6901. Yes, 4 degrees Celsius. We're expecting a few sprinkles ending before midnight. Otherwise, cloudy, windy, and cold. None of this 70-degree crap. Enough of that. Gradually clearing overnight. Low will be in the mid-30s. If you don't like it, you can lump it. Sunday, mostly sunny, windy, and quite cool. High only in the mid-40s. Winds north, 15 to 20 miles per hour and gusty. And on Sunday night, clear and cold. Low in the upper 20s to low 30s. Okay. Now, on to the brand-new, exciting, and somewhat controversial feature, which we're entitling here at the radio station, What's for Lunch? Yes, it's the exciting, provocative new program that tackles the dangerous question, What's for Lunch at Stony Brook?
Good morning. Today, Friday, November 16th, at all cafeterias for lunch, beef noodle soup, spaghetti with meatballs and plain sauce, 5-foot hero. The hot deli menu is the chef's choice. tonight at all three cafeterias. They're having their Thanksgiving Grand Buffet. Beef barley soup, carved roast turkey breast with chestnut stuffing and giblet gravy. Baked ham, pasta primavera, with potatoes, sweet potatoes, peas with pimentos, cauliflower au gratin, pumpkin pie, pecan pie, coconut custard pie. The Fanny Bryce Food Mall is open for lunch and dinner, serving Italian, Mexican, Chinese, and American favorites. Thank you again for calling the FSA hotline.
And now you know why we only air this after 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for the tripods and your phone call, 632-6901. Radio Free Long Island, in conglomeration with the Three Village Tobacco Farms, presents the dramatic adventures of the Tripod Family, the story of one of America's most illustrious families and their struggle to find peace and happiness in the suburbs of Long Island. When we left our friends last week, Howard and Kathy had just remembered that the house that they had lived in is no longer theirs. And now, as we join them with Charlie and Pop, we hear... You know, it sort of takes all the fun out of coming home when you find out that you no longer have a home.
Yes, I realize that, Howard. And I feel just awful about renting out our house like that. It's a stupid thing for me to do, and I'm really...
No, but don't be like that, Kathy. It wasn't really your fault. That slimy Uncle Jonathan of yours put those crazy ideas into your head. We should have never listened to him.
Speaking of Uncle Jonathan, where in the world did he disappear to? He was just here a minute ago. He was standing over there.
Who knows? Who cares? He could be an Outer Mongolia now, for all I care.
Well, I guess he just left as mysteriously as he arrived. But that's neither here nor there. We've got to find a place to live.
Okay, folks, everything's all set.
What's all set, Charlie?
Oh, I just got off the phone with my cousin Herb. He's a real estate broker, and he says he has a whole bunch of houses that would be just perfect for your family.
Really? Oh, that's great.
Hey, how about that? Oh, maybe today won't be such a disaster after all.
Well, I never even knew your cousin was a real estate broker, Charlie.
Oh, no?
Oh, yeah, but then again, I didn't even know you had a cousin. So that probably explains it.
Yeah, I guess so. Oh, there you are, Mr. Tripod. Where have you been?
None of your God-blessed business, Charlie. Can I do anything without having to give a detailed account to the whole world?
Don't mind him, Charlie. He Pops used to be a little bit cranky today.
I think he must have gotten up on the wrong side of the bed this morning.
So what else is new?
I didn't even have a bed. Charlie made me sleep in an old sleeping bag.
Well, I didn't have anything else, Mr. Tripod. What was I supposed to do?
Let's just stop all that bickering. You ought to be ashamed of yourself, Pop. Charlie didn't have to put you up in his house while Howard and I were away.
That's right. He did it because he wanted to.
Yeah, he likes seeing people suffer.
Now, that's about enough, all right? Now, Charlie, when can we see this real estate cousin of yours?
Oh, yes, we'd like to find a house as soon as possible.
Well, he can see you as early as tomorrow, if that's what you want.
Well, that's fine with me. How about you, Howard?
Couldn't be better. The sooner we find a place and get everything around here back to normal, the better for everyone.
Hear, hear.
Oh, I feel a lot better already.
Well, I still feel terrible. But nobody cares about me anyway.
I feel hungry, that's all I know. Does anybody want anything to eat around here?
Oh, Charlie, how good of you. I know what I'd like. In fact, I've had a sort of a craving for it ever since I left Big Bear City.
What's that, Kathy?
Well, remember when we got married and we used to go to that restaurant on Roosevelt Island?
Oh, yes, that was way back.
Yes, well, I'd like some of that that roast squab, you know, with the marinara sauce?
Yeah, I remember that.
I'd like...
Exquisite little place that was.
Yes, it was. I'd like some of that. And with a side order of shrimp and hash browns.
Oh, yes, you always worry one for the hash browns. Oh. I was thinking more along the lines of some of that shish kebab, you know, like they sell in the park on those sticks.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that would be really something. With that sauce, what do you... Oh, what was that sauce?
Barbecue sauce?
No, it wasn't barbecue. It was barbecued. Was barbecue, but it wasn't barbecue
was
sauce.
Was it that new stuff, that barbecue cucumber sauce?
No, that was... I don't even know what that is. It was, if I can only remember. Oh, I know what it was. It was tartar sauce, that's it.
Oh, tartar sauce. Well,
yeah.
That's very good.
Yes, it is. Well, what do you want, Pop?
Oh, A sirloin steak would be pretty nice. I prefer mushroom sauce and a bottle of cold wine.
Oh, wait a minute.
How does that sound?
Wait a minute. I think I'm just going to go out and order a pizza.
And so, Howard, Charlie, Pop, and Kathy discuss the tripod's plans for their new home. Where will it be, and what will come of it? You want to be with us next time when we'll hear Charlie say,
I should know better than to ask you people anything.
That's next time on The Tripod Family, a conglomeration of Radio Free Long Island and the Three Village Tobacco Farms. This is Don Topeka. I'm so sorry. I've been playing so much music tonight, it's not even funny. Oh, but Julie Cruz is so captivating, you know? It's hypnotic, almost. Well, as we break out of our trances, that was The World Spins off her Floating Into the Night record. Words by David Lynch, music by Angelo Badalamenti. And you're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook. The program is Brain Damage. We've got our special celebrity guests in the other room. Say hi. Oops, I did it again. I hit the wrong button. Say hi.
How you doing?
Okay. I didn't say how you doing. I said say hi. But that's neither here nor there. 632-6901 is our telephone number. We're trying to get phone calls from our faithful listeners out there. We've got a few on the line. Let's get a couple more. And, well, celebrity guests, is this your first time in the radio station?
This is my first time.
This is Rick's.
Rick's first time.
Sure, Andy's been here.
It's not Andrew's first time, that's for sure.
No, I've been here many times.
He's a veteran of this place.
Yes.
Although this is the first time you've come here since your voice has changed.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you were a little kid last time you were here.
Right.
Yeah.
A lot has happened to me since then.
A lot has happened. You care to detail it for our listening audience?
Job,
too explicit.
Know.
Well, we want to know. You know, we want to know what's going on.
No, you know, my job and other things.
Where do you work?
LaMonica's restaurant. Italian restaurant.
What do you
Good
do?
Good food, eat there.
What do you do?
I'm a busboy.
Really?
Yeah.
Isn't it challenging work?
Not really. You know, I've gotten a couple of personal tips.
Personal tips? You mean people that sort of throw money in with the garbage?
Oh, no. They just hand it to me.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, that's good, I guess. You know, when I was a busboy once for a couple of days, and I never came in contact with actual people. You know, you'd have to pick things up from a certain part of the restaurant and bring it into the back.
Oh, yeah, I'm friendly.
Uh-huh. Yeah, see, they didn't like people. They didn't like busboys to mingle with the people. But I'm glad to see that our society has become enlightened over the past few years. It's always a positive sign. Anyway, we have a full switchboard, so what do you say, guys? You think we should go right to it?
Right.
Sounds good.
Well, any particular subject? Are you wanting to talk about something in particular?
No. Well, let's see what the listeners want to hear.
Well, it's always gotten us into trouble before, but let's see if tonight might be an exception. Again, if you are calling in, the number is 632-6901. However, to speak to Rick and Andrew, you will have to listen to your radio at the same time, as they have no way. Well, they can hear you, but you can't hear them because of the way the studios are set up. So have a radio nearby in order to hear what they're saying, because what they're saying will be profound. No question about that. Good evening.
Hi.
How you doing?
I wanted to know what you think about what's happening in Iraq and Israel.
What's happening in Iraq and Israel? Well, it's a lot of nasty things are happening. You know, you got a lot of stubborn people that insist upon having their way and see no room for negotiation. You know, and for that matter, I think Iraq is incredibly similar to Israel. You know? Which is a statement I'll probably get me in trouble with just about everybody there is. But do you have any thoughts on the matter, caller?
Not really.
Yeah? How old are you? May I ask that?
I'm 9 and a half.
You're 9 and a half? Well, I mean, when I was 9 and a half, we didn't even talk about Iraq and Israel and other countries like that. So, you know, it's good that you're aware of it. It's bad that there's so much going on there that makes you aware of it, you know. As a 9-year-old, do you think we're going to get into a war?
Yeah.
Really? You think that's inevitable? There's no way around it?
Not really the way it's going.
Uh-huh. If you could say something to Saddam Hussein right now, what would it be? And keep it clean.
Yours.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess it's about as clean as we can expect. Thanks for calling. 632-6901. Up yours, man. From a 9-year-old kid to Saddam Hussein, if that doesn't start a war, I don't know what will. Oh, boy. Andrew, what would you say to Saddam?
Oh, I really don't know, you know.
You said before you liked him.
You like Saddam?
No. I just like to see him.
That's so cool. Do you like Saddam? We got a Saddam liker in here. That's great. Saddam has his face.
Not really like, but see, I have this thing that I'd like someone to take over the world. You know, someone just to have some kind of one particular world leader that you know runs the whole world.
What's good about one particular world leader?
Oh, it brings everything together. I mean, I don't particularly think that you know taking over a poor. The past and
it'll happen in the future. There's no way around it.
United States has done the same thing, you know, the countries like Guam and Puerto Rico, so
mm-hmm. which may become a new state, I hear. But that's something else. Slowly people are coming out as a piece in the Times today. For months, the Persian Gulf crisis has invited this surprising question. What if they gave a war and no protest movement came? While the Pentagon was presiding over the largest American deployment since Vietnam, many of the left liberal voices known for past condemnations of military intervention spoke in quiet or ambivalent tones. Some even supported the action. But that is now changing. We mentioned this last week, in fact, and it continues this week. It's now changing as the recent increase in American forces in the Gulf has brought sharp criticisms from intellectuals and organizers camped under the broad tent of left liberal opinion. But despite the criticisms, many on the left disagree about what the United States should do to counter Saddam Hussein's invasion of Kuwait. Some of the loudest objections to the deployment have been voiced by conservatives, like the columnist Patrick Buchanan, who's always complaining about one thing or another. He and several other conservatives have parted company with their traditional allies by accusing Washington of war hysteria and arguing that the United States has no compelling interest in the Persian Gulf. While the split on the political right has received much notice, less attention has been paid to the evolution of thought on the left. But among the factors showing an anti-war response, slowing an anti-war response, is the obvious one. There has not yet been a war. Right. And it took several years of actual fighting in Vietnam for widespread protests to emerge. But one thing that does stand on our side in this particular case is that we have a memory of what occurred in Vietnam, and we sure don't want that to happen again. So there is quite a bit of concern being raised, and I think as we get further and further into this thing, you'll see more and more concern. Hopefully, some of you folks out there who will be directly affected by this, trust me, you'll start waking up. Andrew, how old are you, Andrew?
I'm 14.
14.
15.
Yep, I'm 15.
Well, you know, you guys only got a couple years to go before you got to register for the draft. And who knows, there might be a draft by then.
Well, if this whole crisis lasts that long, I don't know.
Yeah, there's a notice somebody posted on our bulletin board, and I can barely read it because it's dark in here, but I'm going to try. The Marines and the Navy will be in the Stony Brook Union Thursday and Friday recruiting. Actually, I guess that was yesterday. It must have been, unless they're talking about next week. Okay, both the Marines and the Navy, though. I guess they were competing. Anyone interested in protesting their appearance on campus should show up at the Union Fireside Lounge, 9:30 a.m., either morning for details, or just show up at the recruiting stations and demonstrate. Yeah, but I think it already happened, so don't bother. But, you know, you can bother anyway, I guess, but they just won't be there. Or maybe they'll show up and surprise everybody. Yes, definitely last week, because next Thursday is Thanksgiving, and I don't think the Marines and the Navy are going to show up at the Union on Thanksgiving. More power to them if they do, though. Okay, 632-6901. Good evening.
Yo, is Goldberger there?
Goldberger's there.
Yo, Andy.
Yeah, hi.
Who is that?
Yeah, you got to be near a radio for you to hear what Andrew is saying.
I can hear him.
Okay, say hello, Andrew.
Hi, who is this?
It's Justin, you know, Spanish class.
Yeah.
Justin from Spanish class, huh? Maybe you should say something in Spanish, eh?
Hola, dude.
Hola. Oh, man, Felix would like you. That's what level of Spanish are you in?
Spanish 2.
Spanish 2, huh?
Yeah.
That's really good. And how far are you going to go with it?
All the way, dude.
All the way. All right, you be a Spanish major, man. Be a Spanish major. We need more of those. Anything else you want to say?
Yes, Saddam's a dick.
Okay.
Oh, my Lord.
Well, you know, the young people seem particularly incensed by the actions here. And I know statement came after a lot of careful thought about what's going on in Kuwait and Saddam's previous history as far as poisoning his own people with gas and the fight against Iran and all that kind of thing. So, yeah, I guess with all that, you know, and the high-intensity situation that we have here on the radio, somebody could be moved to say something like that. So, yes, I understand perfectly.
Rick and I are totally in control, and we will hold our bad comments, you know, about what I was saying to ourselves.
Okay. Fair enough.
We'll keep our obscene comments.
Give Saddam a break, you know.
Yeah.
He's taking poor guy's probably got a lot to worry about. Anyway, it's 11:35. Our phone number is 632-6901. We've got a couple open lines, and we want to hear from you as far as the world situation, the situation as it affects you personally, and all that kind of thing. So give us a call. Good evening.
Yeah, hi, how are you?
How you doing? You got your radio on too loud.
Oh, sorry, what was that?
Yeah, that's called feedback.
All right, sorry.
Yeah, that's all right.
I hate those, like, kids that have to call up and say things, like, in curses on the air. It ruins it for the rest of us.
You just gotta, like, find them and beat them up before they do it, I guess. I don't know.
What he said about whatever that guy was, who was it?
Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, I mean, I think the total opposite. I think you're the dick.
Ah, oh my. Well, again, you know, we realize that certain high-intensity situations occur
and produce these
outbursts. It's part of the human element, you know, and what can you say? What can you do?
Got to go with the flow.
Go with the flow.
To use a
good,
corny
write
phrase.
That down. That's good. That's a good
corny
phrase.
But it's good, huh?
Yeah. Okay, it's 4 degrees outside, and not much warmer inside most people's heads, apparently. 632-6901, if you have an intelligent comment, give us a call. Good evening.
Yeah, what's up, man?
Hey, what's up, man?
Yeah, man, what's with the Brady Bunch cursing out Saddam Hussein on the air, man?
Well, they're not exactly, you know, cursing them out. They're expressing righteous indignation. Can you say righteous indignation?
Yo, righteous indignation?
Yeah,
what little schleps you got on the air, man?
Well, you know, schleps have a place in the world, too.
They don't.
Well, some of them do, but some of them don't. You're right, so let's move on to the next call. Good evening.
Yeah, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good. I'd just like to ask Rick what he thought about our deck hockey game this afternoon.
Well, I sure hope we do better next time.
Deck hockey?
Yeah, we had a big deck hockey game.
They lost.
We don't want to talk about that.
Who's we?
This is
Dan.
What's up, Danny?
Okay, you got Dan there, but I want to know who we is.
The Wolverines is the name of our team.
The Wolverines?
Sure.
And, are you on the Wolverines?
Yeah, I'm on the team.
I'm on, too.
How about Andrew?
I'm not on. I'm
What's wrong with you, Andrew? Why aren't you on the Wolverines?
Oh, I don't know, Dan. They're a tough team to get on. But
guys, let Andrew on the team. I mean,
sure. All right, yeah, next season you're on.
Okay, because he's a vital asset to have around.
That's for sure.
No question about it. You know,
also, Rick got 2 goals today.
Rick got 2 goals. You see, he's sitting there, didn't say a word. That's incredible.
I'm modest.
And another thing about Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
I think he should get out of Kuwait, because Bush is going to blow.
First intelligent comment
off.
Made about Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, well, yeah, maybe. I think, you know, he said that he was willing to leave Kuwait. Well, okay, what do you think? You think it should be tied in, you know, we should negotiate the Palestinian issue if he gets out of Kuwait. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah.
I do, too. Okay. I'm glad we're in agreement on that. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Dan.
I think it was, Howard Baker or somebody like that said, absolutely not, we're not going to solve the Palestinian issue if Saddam gets out of Kuwait because we don't believe in rewarding him for invading. But you got to think, you know, solving the Palestinian issue, that's a reward? That's a necessity. That's something you got to do. It's got to be something that, you know, you don't think of as something you give someone. You have to do it. And whether or not Saddam ever gets out of Kuwait, we've got to solve that issue, or we've got to encourage that issue to be solved and be quite vigorous about it, too, because none of these conflicts are doing anybody any good. What do you think, guys?
I think whatever you say is right.
Whatever I say is right. Oh,
you got
I love
on
blind
straight.
Faith. This Thanks. Is amazing. 632-6901. Good evening. Hello, go ahead. Is anyone there? You know, you might check your mouthpiece. Sometimes mouthpieces break down and you can't hear what people are saying. Good evening.
So you don't...
Sorry.
Oh, wow.
I wonder what it was about that voice. No, that you see, what happens is we have a special device here on the phone, and this caller is probably going to think that that we hung up on him, but we didn't. That particular, it's happened before, that particular tone of voice, for some reason, knocks the call right off. I don't know what that is. There's probably some electrical engineering expert out there that can tell me why that happens, but... when you hear a certain kind of phrase, kind of tone, kind of, I don't know, way of speaking, it just goes right off. I don't know. Mysteries of telephones and radio. Good evening.
Yeah, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
Where are you calling from? Where are you calling from?
Northport.
Northport.
Yeah.
All right, Northport. So what's on your mind tonight?
Well, I'm to talk about Saddam Hussein.
Okay, what else is there to talk about on a Saturday night but Saddam Hussein?
Oh, yeah. I'm very in favor of Saddam Hussein.
You're in favor of Saddam Hussein?
Yeah.
Well, that makes two on the island.
Well, now, what does that mean, you're in favor of him? You're in favor of his continued existence, or...?
No, because if he's strong enough, he should take over every country he can.
Hey, now that's might makes right. You know, the strong survive, and you know, the weak shall be wiped off like a plague, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's sort of the American way, I guess. Okay, well, we're sending, you know, our votes over there, so that's one vote for Saddam. Okay, he'll be happy to hear that. Thanks for calling. 632-6901. Good evening.
Plunge into the depths of despair.
Oh, my God, it's him. It's him.
It's
the doomsday. I can't believe you're even calling because everyone is so pessimistic now. What, you know, you're kind of like a moot point.
I don't have any speech prepared for tonight.
Yeah, well, everybody is you know, pessimistic. The economy is falling apart. They're talking about cutting train service. We're about to head into a war. A lot of people are going to die and suffer and be maimed. Now, what have you got to complain about?
Boom and doom. I'm just happy to see that they're trying to open up Shoreham.
They're not trying to open up Shoreham, and they're not going to open up Shoreham. So let's just let that lie as it's supposed to.
He needs Shoreham now.
Yeah, we need Shoreham now like we need a hole in the head.
May I ask him a question, Eric?
Can you hear Andrew?
Yeah.
Okay, Andrew wishes to speak to you. Speak, Andrew.
Yes. What are your feelings of Saddam Hussein? Are you pro or against Saddam Hussein?
That's a tough question. I have mixed feelings about Saddam Hussein. I really don't know enough about him to really make any comment, except it. As far as the oil thing goes, whatever's on his land is his oil, and if he wants to charge $10 a gallon for it, let him charge it.
Wait, Kuwait is his land?
Oh, that's not.
Okay.
But, I don't know what to make of it.
I think the whole thing that happened that started this, if we can remember, was that Kuwait was selling more than they were supposed to, and it was hurting Iraq's economy because of that. And if you look at the you know, the average income, Iraq is something like $1,000 per person, and Kuwait is something like $24,000 per person. So, you know, with that in mind, you can kind of understand what went through his head. And you might see why he did what he did. That, along with the fact that Kuwait once was a part of Iraq, you know, you might see his logic. I'm not saying you agree with it, but you might see it, and that in turn might lead you to come up with some kind of face-saving device so he can pull out of there and everybody can go home.
Well, Long Island used to belong to the American Indians, too, and I don't see anybody giving the land back to the Indians.
Well, that's because we did such an effective job of wiping them out, you know? There's hardly any left.
Yeah, we sure cheated them, and I'm sitting here on Indian territory myself. I must be a hypocrite.
Well, you know, it's, maybe you are, but, it's not like you took it yourself, you know? It's, I don't know.
But I'm not giving it back either. I must be pretty bad.
Well, no one's asked you to give it back yet, but if somebody does, then we'll see what happens.
I don't own any land, so I can't give any back.
Well, then what are you talking about? You said you were on land.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I just think that everybody's on everybody else's land.
Exactly. You can't own land. You know, that's one thing the Indians are right about. You cannot own land.
You can only be the proprietor.
And the land takes care of you if you respect it.
Well, that's why we got to open Shoreham now.
Oh, come on. You just contradicted everything you just said.
But everybody's complaining about nuclear energy, but nobody's addressing the real problem, why we needed Shoreham in the first place and why we need all this energy in the first place. Not one person stands up, not one in the media, not one do I hear one person address the real problem of the world, why we need all this energy. You know as well as I do why we need all this energy, and we're in trouble.
Why do we need all this energy?
There's too many goddamn people in the world, that's why, and now it's going to go into havoc if there's a war, because you're not going to have enough energy to support all this crap that everybody's built.
Yeah, but if there's a war, then there'll be so many less people. You see, that's sort of the beauty of it.
I don't really think that you're going to see that kind of a war. I think you're going to have... Like,
look, it was in the papers. All that has to happen is we've got to invade Iraq. Iraq is going to spray chemical dust all over Israel, wipe out 98% of the population. Israel is then going to send over a nuclear bomb and kill everyone in Baghdad.
I think it's going to be that bad. Come on. It's not going to be anything like the Stalinist era or when Hitler or when the Turks marched the Armenians across the desert. We're not even going to put a dent in the population. We're going to have social anarchy, to give you one of them oxymorons.
Yes, but in the nuclear power that we have right now is 15,000 times the strength of what it took to blow up the two bombs in Japan. So why would we need more energy from Storm?
Why do we need more people? Why do we need all these people with all these TVs that keep on procreating with no control? That's why we need that energy. People are dangerous, not the nuclear plant. We wouldn't need the nuclear plant if there weren't so many people.
Yeah, you're right. We do waste a lot of resources. That's something that doesn't seem to have changed. What is all that noise in the background?
Where, over here?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe the TV is interfering somehow.
Well, you have the TV on, but you're talking on the radio. Why is that?
Oh, I have it on, but the sound is off. I was just getting irritated at the abortion yin-yangs.
So you left the TV on to make a phone call, huh?
The Operation Rescue Nitwits. They should worry more about this planet than worrying about a child that doesn't want to be supported by the parents. Operation Rescue Nitwits, if you're listening out there, you're a bunch of airheads.
Okay, well, let's not get them involved in this right now. Hey, tell me something. What do you think of the train cutbacks? Have you heard about that?
Well, I've been reading the paper, and I have a lot of theories about this recession that they say. I think, in a funny kind of a way, the media is helping to feed the problem. Of course, an economic downturn is news, but somehow the media seems to be like fueling the fire. I wonder if it's really as bad as they say it is. You know, there's a lot of money sloshing around.
Well, you know, nothing is ever really as bad as they say it is on the 11 o'clock news. That's an old saying that dates back to the turn of the century, I think.
Here's your question. Here, let's take a little mini poll.
Okay.
Okay?
Mini poll. Go ahead.
How many people do you know that are out of work?
Boy. A few. Not all that many, but then again, I know a lot of people that have no desire to work. That's something else, I guess.
Because of this recession, quote-unquote, how many people do you think are out of work? Because I personally really don't know, maybe know one or two. They're still working, but they're a little slow.
Yeah, but that's a lot of homeless people, though, you know? And the funny thing is, a lot of them do work, but they still don't have homes. And that's something that's definitely grown over the last 10 years.
Well, that goes back to what I say, but we could talk about that forever and ever. I mean, if there wasn't so many people, you could just take your own little land and chop down a couple of trees and make your own little log cabin, but you can't do that anymore. Those days are long gone.
Well, I don't think log cabins are going to solve anybody's problems right now.
Well, you can't do that. There was a time when you could, but you can't do it now because technology has interfered with nature's plan. But that's another story. But, well, the Fed has lowered interest rates, and that'll bring down the prime rate for the banks. They'll be able to lend out more money to their better customers. So maybe that'll boost the economy a little bit there. But I don't like all this profanity on the air. Not that I'm against profanity, but you got a lot of people making derogatory remarks towards your host, Eric Corley here, and that's not called for. People like that shouldn't bother calling in.
Well, I didn't hear any profanity. I just heard a couple of ways of describing people, but none of them are really considered profane.
Well, they were calling you, they were making derogatory remarks at the host tonight.
Well, that's okay. You know, this is a democracy, and God bless it, you know. We have the right to criticize people.
Oh, I'm glad to hear you say that, because the name of the program is Brain Damage.
Exactly.
You always used to hang up on Mr. Radio.
Well, you know, that was different.
It was a character. The guy was a character, let's face it.
But the show is mostly for the human race, you know?
Let's see who else has to call tonight. I'm sure you don't have much time left, so let's see what other brain-damaged people we have out there tonight.
The phones are lighting up like you would not believe, so thanks very much for calling, and hopefully we'll hear from you again soon.
Oh, yeah, I'm always trying to listen in when I can.
All right. Well, good luck to you. Good night.
That's a good work.
All right. 632-6901 is our telephone number, and we're going to take some more calls, and we have one line open, so give us a call. Good evening, you're on the air.
Good morning, today, Friday.
Oh, no, get off. It's a cafeteria lady again. You had your chance before, and we'll hear from you again next week. Good evening.
Yeah, hi, how are you?
How you doing?
In reference to that guy that just called, not to, like, criticize him or anything, but his attitude is why do we need all these people in the world? And why do we need him, put it that way? He's, like, yelling about people with all their TVs on. He has his TV on, and he's not even watching it.
How do you like the way I brought that up? Was that good or what?
Yeah, I mean, I just can't even believe that.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, you'll find a lot of people are doing things like that, and we can all improve our way of doing things, you know? Not leave as many things on. We don't need, you know, a big dangerous nuclear power plant in our backyards, and we don't need half the stuff that we use up anyway. This country has a reputation all over the world as a lot of waste goes on here, and people just don't care. And when you see, you know, how we act in comparison to other cultures, it's true. It really is. I'm not saying we're rotten to the core, because we can change, and I've seen people change. But you've got to be aware of that. You've got to be aware that a lot of what's going on here is just not healthy.
Yeah, who is he to talk, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, he's got the right to say things, but I do agree with you. Everybody's got to look to themselves.
Yeah, well, a little bit off the topic, but I just went to the 9:15 Child's Play 2 show, and it was pretty good. You want to hear a little bit about it?
9:15 Child's Play 2?
Yeah, the new movie.
Yeah.
Stuck in it? Did you see the first one?
No, I didn't.
Well, I'll tell you, can I tell a little bit about the second one?
Sure, why not?
Yeah, it's about this kid, Andy, this kid, Shecker, and this kid, the doll, Chucky. And Chucky sort of kills him. Chucky, I don't know, he starts winning, then he loses. But it's the same old stuff. And then the neighbors get involved, Timor and Kenan.
Yeah, I hope you're not giving away any secrets here that people are going to pound their heads into the wall.
It's okay.
Okay, they're asking you from inside, what would you rate it on, I guess, a scale?
What would I rate it?
Against the first one.
Oh, okay, against the other one. Is it better than the first one, or...
Would I rate it? One big fuck off.
All right, good evening.
I'd like to say hello to Rick.
Go ahead.
Rick?
Yeah, who is that?
Hey, Jeff.
What's going on, neighbor?
Hey, nothing.
What's up, good buddy?
You telling me your secret identity?
Excuse me?
You tell... Eric,
of course, Murray the Psychic. Sure, he knows.
So, Eric, what do you think of him?
I am in awe. I'm sitting here and I just can't think what to say. Is that incredible or what?
So what do you think of Saddam Hussein?
What do I think of Saddam Hussein?
A fan?
He's a force to be reckoned with, and we should reckon with him and stop this sending messages to him. I think Bush and Saddam should sit in a room, and neither one should come out till they figure out what's going on.
Why don't they just end this crap, that's going on?
I agree. It's a big waste of time, a big waste of money. I mean, look at all the things that are going out of business and all the services that are being cut, and we keep sending tens of thousands of people overseas. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Doesn't. Nope. You just raid the place.
Because I went overseas, and I was paying for it for about the next 6 months. Here we sent 500,000 people overseas, and I just don't know how we can afford that kind of treatment.
Yeah.
Sightseeing and all that. Anyway, thanks for calling, and we're going to go on to the next call, 632-6901. Good evening.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm just fine. What's what's on your mind?
Not much, Eric.
Yeah?
No.
Well, it's good when the callers know my name. It's also good when the callers giggle a lot.
You know what I think?
What do you think?
I think that it's very easy to forget about what's going on in the Middle East. It's very easy when, like, Milli Vanilli is on the front page because they're lip syncing, and it's very easy when
Was that shocking or what? They didn't sing the song.
No, they didn't sing the song. And I remember watching them and always thinking, my God, they're not singing. They're not singing. I used to elbow people and say, no, really, they're not singing. No, they're definitely singing. And now it comes out, the truth comes out.
I don't think they sang at all on their first album, did they?
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
And the way this came out was they said they want to sing on the second album, and the producers panicked. They said, no, you can't do that.
I thought that was crazy. Yeah, they said, no, don't sing, definitely. It must be really bad, that's for sure.
I want to hear them. I want to hear them more than anything.
Eric? Sure, I want to hear them sing, too.
Can you hear our celebrity guest?
Yeah.
Okay, they wish to say something. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. One of their excuses were that by lip-syncing, they were allowed to dance more freely without the use of a microphone. And to tell you the truth, I saw them live, and I really didn't think their moves were that really good.
Well, now, what's the excuse for lip-syncing on a studio album, though? That's what I don't understand.
Madonna,
you don't dance on an album.
Madonna was doing the same thing through the whole through the whole French show, you know.
Uh-huh, but she's lip syncing to her own voice.
Right,
she's lip syncing to her own
voice.
It's different, you know. Anyway, caller, what else is on your mind?
I don't know, just what I said before about people forgetting what's going on in the Mideast, and that's why, I mean, people don't remember. They're not getting incensed about it, like, they're not remembering Vietnam, they're not remembering the loss of life, because there's, you live your life, and it's a struggle, and it's also good sometimes, and you want to forget, and you forget.
Yeah.
And I don't think people should, should forget what's going on. I think every day they should just think about it, and,
Well, you know what I think is good? I think it's good that, the way this has been presented, this military buildup has not lost its personal touch. We see actual soldiers over there. We see their names. They're sending greetings home to their families.
Anywhere in town or, you know, wherever you go, I walked into one bakery and they have Operation like Cookie or something where they're sending cookies to men in the Middle East.
Uh-huh. But we see them more this time, I think, as individual people over there. You know, people like us. And I think once something starts and they start getting killed...
What about now?
Look now, and you'll see that the opposition is rising very steadily. And I believe most people now do not want this to happen. Whereas when the invasion first occurred, something like 80% of the people thought we should do something about it.
But in my day-to-day travels around, I don't see people really opposing. Even people who have... You know, loved ones over there, they're not opposing it.
Uh-huh. Well,
maybe they're internalizing it, or maybe with their family group they're opposing it, but certainly there's no real talk on the outside that I see.
Uh-huh.
I think people are very patriotic, and it's bizarre. And
you can be patriotic without, you know, being crazy, you know. That's something that you know, a lot of people don't seem to realize is that you can stand up for what the country stands for, and not be a zealot of some sort.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, you know, a lot of these people they're very uneasy about what's going to happen, and I don't think they want to be an activist if their you know son is over there, for instance, only because it might make things worse for him. But at the same time, I don't see a lot of. Flag waving and saying, "Oh, we gotta nuke Baghdad and all that." As much as I saw it at the beginning, I think people are starting to tone down on that. And I think the weight over the last few months has helped a lot because you know we've had time to think about this and think about whether or not it's really worth it and ask ourselves, well, why are we really there and why are we really there? You know, we're not there to protect democracy. We're not there.
But I kind of wonder, even if we ask that question, why we are really there, and if we agree that, of course, that it's economic, but if we agree that it's not worth risking the lives of many people, would that stop anything?
Who knows? You know, it's...
That's a frustrating part of, I think, being an American at this point, is that no matter what we feel strongly about or are against... Majority of the times, things go through anyway, and things happen no matter what.
Yeah, but you know, to parallel something here with all this talk a few weeks ago about the mall that's going to go up in eastern Suffolk,
right.
A lot of people were against it, and the Brookhaven Planning Board said, "We don't want to hear from you people, we're going to pass this anyway." And it was very frustrating standing there, realizing that we were not being listened to, but at the same time, we were able to make our voices heard anyway. It didn't change the outcome, but, you know, in some way it...
The problem is that when the outcome is not changed in the favor of the majority,
right,
people become very apathetic. And sometimes I don't blame people for not crying out and speaking out against what they think is unjust and unfair, because change... I mean, I know we should be patient for change, but majority of the time, it doesn't come about in the way that we would like it to come about.
Uh-huh. But at the same time, once...
Jason, I mean, money rules in most areas, and we can see that everywhere. I mean, I lived in Syracuse, and there was the same outcry about a mall that was going to be built on a toxic dump. And it was built anyway, and just the way it goes. And people are patronizing the place, which is even more amazing. Some of the people that were protesting against it.
That's, I mean, that kind of thing, yeah, it can turn you off. But at the same time, if you're involved in something and you feel like you made a difference, even if you didn't win, if you feel like you made a difference, you had, you know, you were heard in some way, it's inspiring and it makes you want to continue.
No, it doesn't. If you feel like you've made a difference, in what way? That you were heard, that you heard your voice, that you know, you heard yourself speak about something you feel upset about, but nothing changes for the positive, nothing changes for the better. I mean,
well,
that's,
you know, if you look at it,
all right, that's encouraging. No, I think that you do, if you do that over and over and over again, you tend to get defeated, and then you say, all right, listen, this is too exhausting, I'm going to stick with my own.
Right. Well, the thing is, you know, you don't just confine that to the big issues, because one person voicing things on big issues is not going to make that much of a difference in the long run. I mean, you will make a difference occasionally, you know, you will, whether you see it or not. You will make some kind of a difference, but
I think we make a difference in one way and one way only, and that's on a very small scale. I mean, a small scale between two people. I think even local politics change does not come about, and I think on a larger scale it doesn't come about. But I think between people, on this extremely small scale, change comes about.
Well, that's obviously true, but it's got to be more than that, you know. I mean, it's very frustrating. But think if it didn't exist at all. Think if there, you know, people didn't try to change things on a massive scale. I mean, the authorities would love it, right?
But I think they love it now. I think they eat it up. I mean, the people who are in power, and unless the people who aren't in power take, you know, a nuclear bomb and blow up the people who are in power, they're going to be in power, and they know their position, and they've left. So they let people run around and protest and talk and go crazy. And what happens? Nothing happens. They keep their way anyway. That's what happens all the time, I think.
Yeah, but you see, Vietnam would never have ended were it not for protesters, you know?
Oh, I think we just wore ourselves out.
Yeah, but certainly what happened at home was a factor in that. Well, the thing is, it came too late.
Oh, yeah,
know?
But how do you explain then people coming home from Vietnam and everyone turning their backs on them? How do you explain that?
That's, you know, that's crazy, too. It is. I think we've learned a lot since those days, and that's, you know, hopefully what we'll see applied here, you know? Anyway, we're out of time. Fascinating discussion. I wish I could continue with this.
Ken?
Yeah, well, perhaps I'll put you on hold. I'll come back to you. 632-6901, that was our phone number. Don't call it anymore because we're off the air. But our celebrity guest, I guess it's almost time for you to go, huh? Are you
Hello?
There? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, sorry for the clumsy way this sounds, but we're just not set up to have guests in this studio. It's just a weird way we do things. But
I
hope you enjoyed being here.
Yeah.
Do thank you, Eric.
I hope our listeners enjoyed hearing you. And I hope all those people listening that you told to listen feel satisfied. And I hope we hear from you again.
Thank you.
Sometime
you will.
Soon. Okay. I have no doubt about that. Greg with Brain Damage, Eric Corley saying good night. Stay tuned for Raz and all kinds of other neat things. We'll see you again next week. Good night.